Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chai Chat, Creating New Worlds at Work. My name is Victoria Vitier. I'm one of your co-hosts, and I'm an Enlightened Life Coach and Business Consultant. I am coming to you from Columbus, Ohio, with my other co-host, Mary Rockenstein. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Victoria.
Tell us a little about what you do.
Yes, my business is Leadership Edge Solutions. And I do a number of different things. I'm a general business consultant, but my passion and I think the lens at which I look at everything in life is through leadership, whether it's coaching, teaching, facilitating, you name it. So that's my passion, and that's what I do.
Good. And the intention of our show is to lead everyone into, hopefully, some transformation in the world of work. We hope to shake things up enough to make them better. Right, Mary?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, the past four shows have been pretty interesting. I don't know if any of you have listened recently, but do take a listen to our four-show series on gender and work. The first couple of shows we worked on women and work, and then after that we took a look at gendered energy at work and male and female energy and different tasks and different roles and different ways to make things better. And our final show of the series, we had a guest from across the pond, Anna Letitia Cook, who came to us on the show from the UK and is now working in France.
And she was delightful.
Yeah, she's awesome. So take a listen to that show series and that final one, which takes a global perspective of what's going on with gender and work. And we're switching topics now here in July. We're going to talk about time, believe it or not. And our title for the show is Managing Yourself in Time, and that's a little twist on the time management title for this topic, right, Mary? We're going to do a little something different here.
We are going to do a little something different here. And, you know, Victoria, I think you and I both have talked about this. People still continue, again, they talk about time management, right? And
indeed,
even though you
yes.
and I come at things, I think, from very different perspectives, this is an example of something on which I think we both are completely in the same camp, and that is, you know, you really can't manage time. What you can manage is yourself, and you can manage the way that you respond and react in time, which is just a continuum, right? And it also happens to be that one resource, unlike, you know, money, which you can multiply, you can double, you can lose, especially if you go to the casinos. But, you know, you can't stash away time and save it for a rainy day, right?
Yeah, I kind of liken time to air. It's there, and you can utilize it well and manage yourself well in time, just like you can take deep breaths and breathe slowly and do a good job of oxygenating yourself, or not. And so this show is a little bit about, you know, the concept of time, how it's best to manage yourself in time, some theories and some things that are out there that might be helpful or not so helpful, and we'll give you some other takes on some of these. But, you know, time is an interesting thing, and as you all know, we have phrases, you know, time flies, or, you know, time stood still, or, you know, we use these phrases all the time, and the fact of the matter is we do experience time in very different ways depending on our mental state, depending on our state of agitation, excitement, expectation, et cetera. The same amount of time can be experienced very differently. We've even done exercises with work groups and such on this concept, right, Mary? And we've done some fun things with time exercises.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Victoria,
if I may, I want to interject and just throw out some kind of fun facts about how we waste time. Would this be a good time
mm-hmm.
to do that?
Or manage ourselves poorly within it, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that we can agree on, at the end of the day, we have 168 hours in a week to utilize. But here's some, you know, facts, through research that I think is that I have found through research that I think is pretty significant. And I'm not sure that I think some of these numbers are low, quite frankly, but here we go. The average person wastes about 2 hours a day. I honestly think people waste a lot more than that, but even at 2 hours a day, that's a pretty significant chunk of, especially if you're one of these people that gets highly stressed and I never have enough time and I don't understand why I can't get these things done. And, you know, that's significant. So, you know, if you think about how you waste that, it might be that, you know, you spend a lot of time gaming or a lot of time on social media, which, again, one might argue, well, that's not a waste of time. That's enjoyment. But the bottom line is 2 hours a day wasted on just stuff that isn't necessary or relevant. We spend, how about this one, Victoria? We spend an hour a day looking for stuff. I think I'm guilty of that sometimes. How about you?
Like looking for stuff on the computer or where did I put my glasses?
Exactly. You lost stuff. You don't have an organized system for filing or for storing things. Yeah, yeah. This one, coming from corporate America, this one might sound a little out there, but I can tell you that I believe this to be true. We lose about 31 hours a month in unnecessary meetings.
I was going to say meetings. It's got to be meetings. Yeah.
And I can attest to this. You know, how many times does one get called into a meeting and you're sitting there thinking, I don't really need to be in this meeting, or you invite yourself because, you know, your ego gets in the way. It's like, well, if Susie Q's going to this meeting, I should be in this too. But, you know, there's a wonderful author. I stumbled upon this guy, and I'm going to pull some things out from time to time in this show and the next show. His name is Rory Vaden, and one of the books that he's written is called Procrastinate on Purpose. But, you know, one of the things Rory talks about in the book, and I've never seen it positioned this way, as it relates to meetings, which I think is a huge time waster for many, and obviously the research bears it out. He said, you know, there's two ways you have to look at meetings. You know, it's a need to know and a need to be. So if you need to be in the meeting because you're a decision maker or you're sharing information that the decision makers need, then you need to be in the meeting. But if it's simply a, hey, I'm a worker bee, or maybe I'm not a worker bee, maybe I'm an executive, but still, I don't need to be in the meeting. I just need to know what the outcome is. Well, that's different. So you don't need to waste your time sitting in that two-hour meeting. You can simply have whoever's taking notes shoot you a quick, you know, email summary, and there you go. But we don't do that. We insist on...
Well, the sad fact is a lot of people are required to go to these meetings, and they really don't need to be there, and they know they don't need to be there. But they
I see it both ways. You're right. But there's just as many people that they could opt out, but the ego won't let them.
Yeah. And that's self-management gone awry, right?
It is. And there's one last one I'm going to share, and then I'm going to throw this back to you. But, you know, I mentioned that the average person wastes 2 hours a day. In corporate America, and again, I believe this to be true, I was probably guilty of this, that 15% of all paper that we handle in business is lost. And I can tell you that was particularly true when I was working on immigration back in the early 90s. I can guarantee you the federal government lost lots of forms that we sent in. Unbelievable. But the fact of the matter is, because we don't necessarily have good systems, we're not all highly organized, that's a huge time waster, especially if you then have to go back and recreate that document, that report, that form, you know, what have you. But that's pretty scary.
Yeah, I'm going to call that the big black hole that hectic creates. When you're in hectic or frenzy or non-focus, all sorts of things disappear, all sorts of, flailing about without, you know, much direction and without much outcome, significant outcome. But, you know, it is interesting because I think some of this, you know, there are ways to be in time where you're not necessarily doing something, but you're being in a very, very productive, generative, creative way. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But most people are spending an awful lot of time spinning their wheels and being very, very distracted and agitated and non-focused. And that's where I believe that we're in trouble in a lot of ways in terms of our self-management, because, you know, when the tail's wagging the dog is confused. Not
yeah.
a very happy puppy. So I think a lot of times, you know, sort of this whole time thing is, you know, and let's just do a couple experiential things here on the phone, you know, I mean, in the show here with people. You know, if you try to scoop up, you know, water from a bowl or sand from a beach, and you held your hand out very, very relaxed, and you just scooped, there would be a handful of water or a pile of sand in your hand. But if you got nervous and started squeezing to hold on to that substance, it would quickly disappear. That's how time is. When we get nervous, when we are not relaxed, when we are not focused, when we are not smooth, time is compressed. When you slow down and relax and expand your mind, time expands. This
yeah.
is an interesting thing. It's not just a minute is a minute is a minute. A lot of times I do an exercise. In fact, I did it just yesterday with a support group, meeting group, networking group that I do. And, you know, if you're, say, spending, you know, X amount of time, you know, in this time I timed it to 45 seconds, of writing down something, and I say, okay, write down as many words as you can think of, but start with a certain letter, and everybody's frenetically writing down words. Okay, we don't know how long she's going to give us. And I say, okay, put down your pencils. And then the next thing I just say is, okay, well, I'm going to time you at this task too. I want you to just close your eyes, put your hands in your lap, feet on the floor, take three deep breaths, and then just continue to focus on the rhythm of your breath. And I'll tell you when to stop. I do that for 45 seconds, and I ask them, well, how long did I give you for the first task? And they say, well, half a minute or so, I don't know, 20 seconds, something. How long did I give you for the second? Oh, golly, I didn't know how long that was going to last, about, you know, a couple of minutes, I don't know. And they were both 45 seconds. It's compelling how to a person, people don't experience the amount of time as being the same when they're in a sort of a frenzy task. Okay, I got to write down as many words as I can think of with this letter. Versus, oh, all I have to do is sit here and breathe? Okay. Some people even report they had trouble with the second one. They'd rather keep writing words in a frenzy because they can't sit still and just focus on their breath for 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Interesting, huh, Mary?
It is. And we're going to, in the next show, we're actually going to get into more about the importance of controlling, you know,
mm-hmm.
emotions and stress, et cetera, in order to better manage yourself through time. And I think that's a great example of that. I have to say, Victoria, I've done a similar exercise with groups, and I have a little bit of a twist on that. I do the same thing. I have people, you know, start by, I'm going to time you, just start writing down as many words as you can think of that begin with the letter T or letters TH. But here's the curve I throw in. After about 20 seconds, I say, okay, keep doing that, but also write down as many words as you can think of that begin with KN. And then I let about another 10 or 15 seconds go by, and I add another variable, AR, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you should see the looks on faces when I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the same thing and then do the second version where it's like, just close your eyes, I turn the lights off, you know,
mm-hmm.
focus on your breathing, you know, do all of that. Same results. You know, gee, it felt like the second exercise just went on forever, and it was just, oh, you know, it was relaxing. But we hated the first one, and we really hated it when you interrupted us and you threw in the first variable and then the second. And I always say to the groups, I said, well, what does that replicate in the workforce? And they get it right away. It's multitasking. You know, so here's a great example, again, which I believe is another huge time waster, and I know you feel the same way. But this is another example where, again, it just hits them right in the eyes. It's like, yeah, we really can't multitask. We can only focus on one thing at once.
Right. It's an illusion. And what's happening now in modern life is that people's attention is increasingly fragmented by having to do, you know, being expected to do three things at once, as you had with your exercise there, by being interrupted by bings and bangs and pokes and tweets and whatever on their devices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, constant. Frankly, my theory on meetings is that it just occurred to me the other day. It seems to me that in this fragmented world of how much we rely on devices and really don't make human contact, I think meetings are really an interesting organizational excuse for having FaceTime, to be quite honest. I think it is a weird attempt at intimacy in a system that's pretty broken. And so I don't think it's effective. But that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it about what meetings are about a lot of times. But this whole thing about multitasking is that it's an illusion. You cannot multitask. If you're focused on one task, you have 100% going there, hopefully, unless you're distracted by some other thoughts or things in your life. If you've been asked to do two things, you've got 50% of your attention that's going to any one of them at any time, but you're distracted by the need to do the other one. So we're completely fragmenting ourselves. And hence, I don't know about you, Mary, but it's hard to go through a drive-thru anymore and get the order right. People are making mistakes constantly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And talk about a waste of time and money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's for a multitude of reasons, but yeah, multitasking is right up there. They're asked to do three things at once.
Right.
You know, I worked
right.
in the restaurant industry early on in my career, and I can tell you that the people who typically were perceived as being successful, highly successful, were those mm-hmm. that, you know, could do three things at once, when in fact you're lucky if you're not making a lot of mistakes.
Right.
You know, there's just talking about the meeting thing for a second, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. I was talking to somebody last week, and they were explaining to me that I thought this was amazing. At their company, when they have, you know, they have like a daily update meeting or whatever, and anybody can come, but it's in a big room. They're all standing. They're in a circle. He said that it doesn't matter how many people show up, the meeting is never more than 20 minutes. Because, first of all, you're standing up. So, you know, there was research years ago, I think, that, you know, you'd be much more effective if you, you know, stood all day long and did whatever. And then I think there was some other research that said that, gosh, our bodies weren't really made to sustain that and do that long term. But it works for situations like that. If you're really trying to use meetings as a way of just disseminating information very quickly, answering questions, mm-hmm. move on, I thought that was really cool. And he said people don't balk at going to meetings because – they know that the purpose of the meeting is the purpose of the meeting, and you're there if you need to be there, and they're quick and they're efficient. So enough on that. I wanted to, if I may, I want to bring up another comment that, you know, when I was reading Vaden's book, it really became very clear to me because it hit me right between the eyes, and that is that, you know, every time we make a decision to say yes to something that, you know, if you look at Covey's urgent versus important quadrant, you know, those four quadrants. The first one is urgent. Things are urgent and important. Those are like, that's firefighting, which causes a lot of stress and burnout. And the second quadrant is not urgent but important. And that's where we want to spend our time. That's developing long-term plans, relationships, et cetera. Not a lot of crises. Then you have the third quadrant where things are urgent but not important. And that's where you're, you know, responding to other people's fires. It's like, why does your problem become my problem because you didn't plan thoroughly or what have you? And then quadrant number four, where it's like, shouldn't waste any time here, focusing on things that are neither urgent or important. But here's what, you know, Vaden says is every time we allow ourselves to take on somebody else's urgent but not important task because they didn't appropriately plan, every time we say yes to that, we are, in fact, saying no to something that's probably really important on our to-do list. You know, maybe something in the, again, the second quadrant, which is the not urgent but important, which is really where we want to be spending our time. And I had never really thought about that before, but every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to a lot of other things because time is not infinite. You know, we have a certain number of hours in the week, a certain number of hours in the day, certain number of hours in the work day. And again, I think that is one of the dirty little hidden secrets of ineffective, you know, allocation of time and how we spend it.
Well, the interesting, there's a lot about saying no. And in my mind, I take this from an Enlightenment perspective, from an Eastern, you know, approach perspective. And when you say no, you're actually making yes have meaning, first of all, because yes has no meaning unless no is an option. So that's the first piece. The second piece is when you say no, you're actually clearing or opening or expanding space.
Mm-hmm.
Because no means now there's space
mm-hmm.
to put, do, be, whatever. So no is really important both for integrity because it only gives yes meaning when no is an option, and also for sanity and for peace, which is crucial to the working of the mind. And I can tell you that, you know, we are putting our minds and our bodies through tremendous amounts of stress every day. And if you think this isn't affecting people's health, you know, take a look at, you know, the sick days, et cetera, that are going on out there. And the fact is that, you know, when we create stress in our bodies, it's a very toxic state. And, you know, cortisol does a lot of bad things to your system and has over, I think it's 400 chemical reactions that aren't very good. So, again, when we make these choices and add layer after layer after layer of distraction and stress, non-focus, tension, we're making really poor choices, first in terms of how we manage ourselves in time, but also whether or not we are adding to or, you know, detracting from the health of our mind and our body. And no is a big factor. You know, again, a lot of people out there are probably thinking, well, I can't say no. You know, I'm in a place in the hierarchy where, you know, I'm in this organization and I have no choice. Well, that's probably the most toxic thing in the world, because the ultimate, you know, piece of foundational importance for everyone is freedom. And so it's very important that you sit and realize where your areas of freedom are and expand them and exercise them to their fullest, because it is important that each person that's listening understand that you are really ultimately responsible for not only how you use your time, but where you work and whether or not you're in alignment with the workings of where you work, because all of that creates levels of stress for you. So this leads to bigger and bigger layers of things as well. And if you're finding yourself, you know, really stressed out, you might want to sit and look at, are you doing poor self-management? Is there something that is really toxic, or is there a total lack of freedom in your work environment? There are a lot of factors here in this issue, I think.
Well, a couple of thoughts, and it's an important one. So if you're a worker bee and you feel like you can't say no, right, so you're just overworked, overloaded, you keep digging a hole further and further and further, then again, it goes back to the very reason why we started this show. If your work environment is that toxic and that bad, then your engagement level is probably not very low, and my question is not why are you working, but why are you there? You know, but here's, and I have to say, I think what I'm about to say is really an avenue that most of us could take, but we don't. So I have a boss who keeps piling on. I feel like, who feels like they can say no to their boss? But here's what you can say. Hey, boss, I know you want me to get XYZ project done by Friday, and it's already Tuesday. I don't know if you remember, but I'm working on X, Y, and Z. Now, if you want me to reprioritize and work on this, and put this thing on the back burner, I'm happy to do that. Because, you see, the fact of the matter is, and I'm not slamming executives, but most executives honestly aren't that aware of what people are working on, or I assigned five things last week and I forgot that I did that. You know, this poor person is overloaded. So, you know, we have to take some responsibility and just, and again, I am not an advocate for being a snippy little, no, I'm not doing that. You know, I get, you know, people ask me that question quite frequently, and it's like, you know what? Goes back to how you connect with people and how you influence them. You can say anything to anybody, but your tone of voice, your body language, your choice of words goes a long way. So I think this is one of the keys to managing oneself in time, is being able to say no, but you don't just say no. You explain the situation and you help me, you know, you help advise me, or you say to somebody that's maybe your peer or an underling, it's like, you know what? I can't help you with that today, but I can help you with that on Friday, or you can go over there and give that to Joe or Susie because they can help you with that too. Again, we have to speak up, and I think sometimes that's what causes some of this overloading of schedules, work schedules, projects, et cetera.
Well, I'm going to link this to earlier shows that we did on ego states, which are really important foundational shows for some of what we're talking about now, because if you can self-parent, if you can stay in your adult ego state, then you are much more likely to manage yourself well in time, have cooperative relationships with whatever person in the organization you need to speak with. And I've coached many clients to have these conversations. The problem is that we don't have them enough and soon enough whereas stress builds up, frustration, resentment builds up, and then negative, untoward communication often happens. And, you know, that's why this is really important. Time, your experience of time, is really foundational to being able to see what kind of alignment you're having in your work role. Maybe you're just sort of stressed out and you're bringing that to work and you're not managing yourself well. Or maybe some of what's going on, the expectations, the way you're being worked with at work is creating some of the tension around time. So you need to really parse it out and figure out where this is coming from. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really important for everybody to self-manage and to self-parent and to become an adult in their work role and in their organization, and to evaluate this in a way that produces the most health and, you know, the most calm and focus, because that's the way you do a good job. That's the way you be of high of service in whatever
yeah.
you're doing.
Absolutely.
So this is tying in various and sundry, you know, topics that we've dealt with on past shows, you know, and nothing is separate from everything else. There is sort of a wonderful, you know, interwoven quality to life. And so it's really important to take a look at, you know, this topic in connection with other topics that perhaps we've, you know, we've dealt with in other shows. But it's the same thing as, you know, goal setting or to-do lists, or, you know, you've heard a lot of this where, you know, you go to seminars and they're telling you, you know, eat that frog or do whatever. I don't know, from whatever book is out there on eating frogs or something. But the point is, you know, a lot of this is coming from the outside. You made a point earlier about, you know, whether this is, you know, these quadrants, Covey's quadrants, and my more simplistic paradigm of that is this inside out or is this outside in? If it's coming from outside in, you might want to reevaluate this and see whether or not this is in alignment with you, how you work, and what is the highest order of your activities, you know, and focus for that day. If it's inside out, then obviously it's intrinsic. It's important to you. It's significant to you. And it's important for you to be focusing there.
Yeah. So, Victoria, as you and I are managing ourselves in time today, as we're wrapping up our show, you know, one of the things that you always throw out at the end is a home play. And I'm wondering, do you have any ideas about what people could undertake as kind of a development task in this area? And then we'll pick up again where we left off in our next show.
Well, what I'm going to do is suggest that people experiment with this wild concept of, geez, if I slow down, I actually have more time. That doesn't sound right. That sounds counterintuitive. But I challenge everyone out there, I invite everyone out there to try that. Anytime you're in a bind, don't squeeze tighter in terms of, oh, gee, I have to put more pressure on myself. What you need to do is take three deep breaths, close your eyes, stretch, walk around the office, look out the window, do something that expands you for a few moments, because you can't jam anymore in an already overflowing box of your mind or your energy or anything else. So let's kind of experiment with this week, and when you feel yourself struggling with time, give yourself a few moments sort of on the lily pad of relaxation, even if it's for a minute. A minute is a very powerful amount of restorative time if used in the right way. So how about we try that? We try taking this like lily pad of respite here among amidst our hectic day and see if it doesn't help you to get through some of those time-binding moments that you feel out there. And hopefully that will help you get through your next couple of weeks. We are going to do a second show on time, and we'll come at it from a different angle, right, Mary, in a couple of weeks?
Yep, and that'll be on the 26th.
Absolutely. Well, folks, share this show with others. Hope you learned something new here. If you'd like to talk with us, get in touch with us on our websites, which you can find on the links on the show. And we'd love to hear from you. So you guys have a great couple of weeks creating new worlds at work, and we'll see you on the 26th. Take care, Mary. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.